fumbling
everyone.
Over the dials today. Why, I tell you what Michael G. said about mastering the board. What most people don't know who are listening is that between us and you, there's a lot of electronics. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of electronics, including this thing called the master board, of which Michael G. is the master of the master board. They call him Mr. Master or Mr. Master Master. And we all try to, in our own kind of way, learn enough about engineering so that we could not hurt the board. You know what I mean?
That's the most important part. Don't hurt the board.
Don't hurt the board.
Whatever you do, don't hurt it.
It's because then we take this signal and we digitize the signal and it breaks down and we got to send it all the way up to space somewhere where it actually touches a satellite.
That's amazing.
And then it comes down and, you know, and it goes from us to WBAI on Wall Street, because we're broadcasting from a satellite. And then that goes to, I believe, the Empire State Building, where then it's sent into space. And from somewhere out there, there's a satellite that plops it down on the ears of somebody who could be in the office next door to me.
Just to think about all that traveling of that signal, and then I wonder, once it's up there in space, where else does it go?
And to whom else? You know what
That's
I mean?
That's what I mean. I bet there are some aliens up there who are listening to us.
Who's your favorite planet out there?
My favorite planet could be Neptune. Venus, yeah.
Venus may be listening. This is Armand DeMille with you with Roberta Maria Atti and The Positive Mind. We are talking about transmitting a signal. This is no minor casual conversation that we're doing here. No, this signal that gets transmitted from us all the way down to Wall Street, up back to 34th Street, back up to the universe, and back up down to your lovely ears, wherever you are.
I just saw it.
Did you see it?
I did.
And it's numbers. Uh-huh. It's digitized, no less.
So it's just zeros and ones?
Zeros and ones.
Oh, Armand, that is so amazing.
Recreating in somebody's ears, you know, in a little radio somewhere off in a corner or in your headphones.
Isn't
and if you're listening,
amazing?
And a lot of people are listening by satellite now.
Sure, all over
Italy,
the world, yeah.
But it's what's really important is that the person in my front office, less than 100 feet away, has a signal that took that journey.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know,
it's true.
My voice traveled, and she hears it a split second after I say it. It's traveled thousands and thousands of miles and come back to her.
It seems like a miracle when you describe it. It seems like something magical. How could that be possible? And yet that's what we have.
I think if you're under 15 or under 20, you don't think of it as a miracle.
Right.
You know, because that's the way the world is, the digital age.
You know, Armand, when I was under 10 years old, I didn't even have a TV.
Right.
I barely had a telephone, barely. I must have gotten a telephone when I was 6 or 7.
In New Jersey, where you come from?
Not exactly, but...
In Italy.
In Italy. I did not have a TV until about 10 years of age, and I had a telephone maybe by the time I was 6 or 7. But I was not allowed to use it.
The telephone.
That was too precious.
The telephone was too precious to use. You have to keep your hands off it. So it was a magical device.
Very.
And then the radio became a magical device.
Sure.
You used to listen to radio?
Yes, I used to listen every night to London radio. And that's how I learned to speak English, actually. I used to listen. I would put it under my pillow and I would listen and I would not understand a word they were saying, but it sounded so good. It sounded like freedom.
And you know, it's funny, to people who grew up in a radio age, which are people who usually, you know, 65 and older, who grew up in a radio age, and not you, you're not 65 and older, but in your country, there were no TVs yet.
No.
But in the radio age, it's amazing. When you think about the fact that we used to listen to radio and think it was magic, but now we are that magic.
Right.
We're at the other end of it. We're transmitting it.
Right.
And somebody's listening to it.
You know, I never could have imagined back then that I would be on the other end of the whole thing. But it is magic. And I think I did get that magic sense of enchantment with it, because I remember during the war, I was told that was really all that people could hold on to the radio to hear the words of hope that were coming over the waves that were not available in any other way. So it was a magical instrument back then.
So communications, transmitters, things sending signals are very, very, very important in our lives. It's how the human species kind of got where it is, mm-hmm. through communication, through being able to broadcast, through being able to develop a language that would be able to tell another human something, and then they would learn from that, from hearing it, and then writing them a note or sending them a rock with a sketch on it, you know, or doing a smoke signal. All of these are transmitters. And we have a very good prototype of transmitters, because we live with transmitters all the time. I mean, how many times do you think when you walk down the street you are transmitting? Well, you are. You're transmitting how you feel, you're transmitting how you are, you're transmitting your attention, your intentions.
Yes, in fact, every cell in the body has its own frequency, meaning a sound that, of course, it's too low for us to hear it with the naked ear, but if we could have such a sophisticated listening system, we could pick up. Each cell sings its own little song and sends it out into the universe.
Has anybody made a recording of the sounds of different cells?
Sure, yes. There are recordings of the sound of different cells and of the different frequencies. Of course, a brain cell is going to have a different frequency from a liver cell or from a bone cell, but they all have their own song that they're singing, and quite literally, it really is a sound. It's a vibration that they are emitting.
Can we get those sounds and bring them into the...
I'll do my very
here.
Best.
Because, I mean, there are whale sounds. And I remember once, I talked about this recently, someone raised the level of sperm cells. And you could they had just listening to the sound of sperm, and the sound of sperm sounded exactly like the ocean.
Sure, sure. Well, if you listen to the heartbeat of an embryo, it sounds like very much like the ocean, like the waves, you know, in the ocean. And everything has a sound, and everything communicates through sound. And I would say that humans differentiate themselves from everything else because of their incredible capacity to communicate the most sophisticated, exquisite signal to one another and to the world.
So then we learn that not only do we have our own intentional communications, but we have things that are communicating inside of us. You know, I mean, your blood, you understand your brain has to communicate with your stomach. It has to say to it, okay, send in some enzymes to digest that food.
Oh, the brain has to do that before we start to eat. When we think we're going to eat, the brain already is sending the enzymes. Let's say you're hungry for an apple. The brain is going to tell the stomach, most likely, we're going to get an apple. It's not certain, but get ready for an apple. If we are hungry for a salad, the brain is going to say ahead of time, stomach, get ready to digest a salad. So the brain tells the stomach what to get ready for, what kind of enzymes, because the brain assumes that that's what we're going to find.
And if the brain anticipates that you're going to be spending a little more energy than you were, like if you're about to go on a run or something, the brain will prepare your body to get more oxygen.
Yes.
And the brain will send out signals. Now, it's not only the brain that is sending signals. There are signals going back. There's the stomach sending a signal back to the brain saying, yes, just what you thought, it's salad, but it's got a little meat in it. Could you send me some of those enzymes?
Mm-hmm.
See,
right.
And then this interaction takes place. And they're talking to each other, my friends. And if you think it's crazy to hear voices, as many people do, if you ever listened to what was going on inside your body, you would commit yourself. It's a lot of noise going on in there. But today we learned about more noise.
Mm.
Today, my gratitude goes to Roberta Atti for providing us with most of our research that we do, especially related to the human body. Today, Christina Ulrich was the one who sent me this article, and I want to thank her for this, because something new came up. Something new came up, a new piece of information that seemed a little insignificant, but obviously Christine knew enough that it wasn't insignificant. She sent it to me and to Roberta, and here it is. It's I'll read it to you. Evidence is mounting that estrogen, a hormone critical in a woman's sexual development, should also be thought of as a neurotransmitter when acting in the brain. A neurotransmitter? Wait a minute. Hold on a second here.
Right.
Estrogen is a hormone, right? That's all we thought
it was. That's what we've always believed, and that's what we've always been taught. And it turns out that it also acts as a neurotransmitter, which means it has a much faster effect. It's an immediate communication, as opposed to the hormonal signals, which can be slow and increase or decrease over a number of days. A neurotransmitter is designed to affect some kind of action or to initiate some kind of process in the body in the moment, immediately, with a speed that is, a fraction of a second. Now, we have never looked at hormones as neurotransmitters, because we would look at the long-term effect that they would have over the body and different organs and functions. But now we're saying, yes, they do that. They have this slow effect that regulates the growth and the weight and digestion and activity and muscle mass, etc. But they also, the body also uses estrogen as a neurotransmitter, meaning for short-term communication.
This has profound reference here, because in migraine, headaches, in PMS, in all of the other female-related hormonal stuff, just human emotions, I think about women, and I think about women who are more deeply emotional, I think, than men are. And I know that men may take issue with this, but they are. And in their emotionality, their ability to sense emotions, why? Why do they get wounded so quick? Why do things go so deep with them? Well, there's a very strong signal here that because it's a neurotransmitter and not just a hormone, we're getting a communication about feelings that is virtually unavailable to someone without progesterone.
Without estrogen.
Without estrogen.
Right. Well, why is this important? Because we can't be that quick, for instance, in saying, well, let's say there is a problem with the menstrual cycle. Okay, let's manipulate the estrogen levels and let's just decrease this or increase that, or let's remove the ovaries, or I think that now that we have this information, I think it's going to bring doctors and health practitioners and endocrinologists to be a little bit more careful, for one thing, in manipulating the levels of hormones in the body, because every day we find something new. Every day we see something else that these things do. Every day we realize that they're important, not just for one thing or another, but for the immediate, let's say, perception of the world around us. And when we alter them through biochemistry, through a drug, through surgery, we may have repercussions that were not thought of when we did not understand this.
As an example of this, Roberta, how does estrogen play a significant role in the prevention of Alzheimer's?
Oh, well, that's actually very well-known research, that with patients who suffer with Alzheimer's disease, there's been a decrease of estrogen over the course of many years, and that the loss of adequate estrogen levels can lead to Alzheimer's disease, because estrogen has a protective effect on the dendrites and the neurons and the synapses in the nervous system. So with less estrogen in the brain and nervous system, a person is more vulnerable to damage that could lead to Alzheimer's disease. And let me actually go over a couple of things.
I guess that's important, you know. I mean, it's confusing. What is estrogen? What is progesterone? What is testosterone? What are these things? Could you give us a lesson in it?
Well, let's see. Let's start with estrogen, which is the predominant female hormone. And it is responsible for the way a woman looks. Without estrogen, the body of a woman would not develop with that shape, for instance. That shape is estrogenic, meaning that estrogen determines how a girl develops from a child into a woman. Estrogen has a lot to do with body fat, for instance. And I think Dr. Kokai was just interviewing a doctor from Colombia, and they were talking about how estrogen is secreted by fat cells, so that people who have more fat produce more estrogen. Now, women need estrogen because through estrogen, the body accumulates fat, which is necessary in order for a woman to have a proper menstrual cycle, for instance. When we go below a certain body fat, the menstruation can cease completely. Why? Because the body of a woman is designed to have babies. And without fat, the body says, no, I can't afford to give life to someone else because I don't even have enough for myself. So estrogen is the hormone that makes sure that the body of a woman has enough reserves in terms of the fat tissue, that there is enough to conceive and nurture an offspring.
So if a woman is beyond giving birth to babies, Roberta, why doesn't she just give up her estrogen?
Because
I mean, what does she
estrogen
need it for?
continues
I mean, you're just going to get fat.
Not exactly. Because estrogen continues to have, like I said, a protective effect, for instance, in the nervous system, in the cardiovascular system. It continues to regulate the blood sugar level, fluid retention, hair growth and length, retention of minerals and other nutrients. So it has a lot of functions. It has to do with bone density. So it has a lot of functions that are not necessarily related to pregnancy, but they are important for the maintenance of all the tissues in the body. And I do have to say, Armand, that in the literature, often estrogen is portrayed as the bad guy and progesterone as the good guy when it comes to the hormonal system of women. Be careful with that, because it's easy to get misguided, wherever I look at estrogen, I find information like increases body fat, reduces oxygen levels in the cells, reduces vascular tone, decreases libido. So it seems like there's a lot of description of estrogen as a negative thing, and I think it's because estrogen has been correlated with the increase in the cancers and tumors of the reproductive system.
Yeah, it just sounds, estrogen sounds like a big pain. I mean, testosterone is a big pain too. Testosterone makes wars. It makes guys rape women.
Right.
You know, I mean, why don't we just do away with testosterone and estrogen?
Without them, Armand.
And we'd all lose weight.
and we all lose weight, right? And then, and also we're all nice and happy, and we're not depressed anymore.
Because depression is related to
depression. Estrogen. Yes, apparently there's a. Apparently, I mean, there's a link. There seems to be a link between depression and estrogen levels. But what estrogen does as a neurotransmitter, not only does it communicate directly to cells of the nervous system and the immune system and the digestive system and all of the systems of the body, but it also it couples it, itself with other neurotransmitters in its action. In its communication, so that, for instance, it affects the levels of serotonin, of norepinephrine, of opiates. So when we mess with estrogen, when we decrease estrogen, when we increase the levels, when we interfere with estrogen levels in the body, we're really affecting. The body in a way that could be unpredictable unless we understand all of this.
Now, what's the relationship between levels of estrogen and levels of testosterone?
It seems that the higher the testosterone, the lower the estrogen and vice versa.
So if one excludes
the other.
So if you get the typical woman who you'd imagine who works out in a gym who gets 0% body fat, would she increase her testosterone?
Oh, definitely.
She increases testosterone.
Sure, because the more you increase your ratio of muscle versus fat in the body, the lower your production of estrogen and the higher your production of testosterone.
So then she gets male secondary characteristics?
More so than a woman who doesn't exercise that much. You see, women are not designed to do strenuous exercise. They are designed to move and to be active, but not to do the kind of intense exercise that, some people think is the right thing to do. We're not designed for that because the body of a woman is through evolution, has been shaped by the need to perpetuate the human race and to support the children and to nurture the children. And so the function of estrogen is really to maintain female shape and structure in a way that is ideal.
All right, but now,
for that function.
So it's still been a mess. Estrogen and testosterone are still troublemakers. Hormones are troublemakers. We know that from... Do you like this way of talking?
Well, I know a lot of people think that way.
Sure. Ever since you're a teenager, watch out. His hormones are coming. Mm-hmm. So doing away with the hormones is what most people would like to do. But today we learned something else. But you can't because they are neurotransmitters also, meaning... they have an important communication, and your brain would turn to mush if you didn't have your estrogen and your progesterone. You need it because it keeps things communicating.
Well, and also, I'm thinking, Armand, we look at things from such a kind of a... we try to be so objective and so non-emotional when we look at biology and when we look at the way these things work in the body, but... If estrogen is a neurotransmitter, meaning that it communicates an immediate signal to the nerves, I mean, think about it. What kind of a signal could it affect? What kind of a communication could it bring? What kind of what does estrogen say? What does it have to say to the brain, to the nervous tissue, to the body? What is the message contained therein? And an estrogen, being, of course, a predominantly female hormone, maintains the body's structure in a way that is ideal for a woman, and it maintains the body... flexible and the skin soft and moist, the eyes moist and bright, the teeth and nails healthy and strong, the hair. It does serve all these purposes that are not secondary, that are not meaningless, that are very important. And so I think that this is what we're finally looking at, that it's perhaps not that wise to jump in and think that we know better and that we should interfere with the way that the hormonal system functions in the body of a person, because look at all the functions that hormones are involved with. So, but anyway, I started with estrogen, and I want to talk for a moment about progesterone, because progesterone is the companion, let's say. The estrogen is the hormone that supports the structure and function of many of the body's organs and systems. Progesterone, let's see, what does it do? It helps, for instance, to use fat for energy. So when your body requires more energy than what is available in your blood through the food you've eaten, progesterone can help reach the fat that's been stored and transform it into energy so that it's available for use. Progesterone can act as a diuretic, contrary to estrogen, which is promotes fluid retention. Progesterone can normalize the clotting of blood cells. It can increase libido. It can normalize levels of blood sugar, zinc, and copper. It promotes cellular oxygenation. It prevents problems with the endometrium, which is the inner wall of the uterus. It stimulates bone growth and maintenance and repair. It restores vascular health and vascular strength. It is a precursor of steroid hormones like cortisol. It also is the hormones that is responsible for maintaining an embryo. When a woman is pregnant, progesterone is the hormones that make sure that embryo stays in the uterus. It doesn't fall out. I think we're up to the time to take a break.
All kind of important stuff. So this you got, my friends, this you understand, but now this effect of it being a neurotransmitter, that effect and what effect it will have on you, that's what we're going to have to take a look at when we come back, because new mysteries of life unfold as days go by, and when we come back, we're going to tell you why you shouldn't eat quail.
I agree, Armand.
And you agree? Why
yes,
you should not
no quail.
Eat no quail. No quail. We'll be back with you in a couple of minutes.
We are
to dance freely with the Arabs. You know what I mean? I mean, just to be able to twirl some fabric and do whatever you can to be as free as possible. Do you understand that somewhere in the Middle East right now, there's somebody filling their car with gas, and it says gas shortage, mm-hmm. and they can't get enough oil to fill their car in the Middle East?
Mm-hmm.
Because
that's
the price
right.
of oil is up so high. It's so funny. It reminds me of when I went to Cuba, and I couldn't get a cup of coffee because they exported all the coffee.
I thought you couldn't get cigars.
No, in Cuba, there's a shortage of cigars, too. Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't smoke cigars.
Mm.
But
well, if I were in Cuba, I would smoke a cigar. I mean, it makes sense, right?
Well, that's because you don't have enough estrogen.
Okay, I was going to
You know what I mean, Roberta? It's because you're
do
a
you
testosteronic
mind?
Cigar
I
smoker.
I do not believe I have. I do not believe what you're saying. I have plenty of estrogen, and then some. And I was going to say that the music you played, Armand, is estrogenic. I perceive it as. Meaning,
it is.
It's a belly dance kind of music, isn't it? It's the kind of music. You remember when we did the sexuality series and we talked about the giggle? No, not giggle.
Jiggle
effect. That's estrogen. Meaning, estrogen gives a woman the look of youth, the look of health, the look of what's the word? Illustrious hair. I like that. So be careful when you think that estrogen is bad. Yes, it's true that certain kind of reproductive system cancers are estrogen dependent, meaning that they can only grow in the presence of estrogen. But that doesn't add up to thinking that estrogen is bad. In fact, estrogen is necessary even for men. And this is where this research is so important. Men do everything they can to stay away from estrogen, usually, unless they want to switch gender, and in that case they inject estrogen into their bodies so they can develop breasts and, you know, curves like a woman. But if they don't want to change gender, they try to decrease anything that could be estrogenic. Well, not such a good idea, it turns out, based on this research, because if estrogen is a neurotransmitter, it seems to have an important effect for men in the way it regulates their sexuality and their pain threshold. Now, I don't know how to explain that, and it's not yet out in the literature, so I'm not going to venture and speculate.
Well, do speculate, because, you know, you're a good speculator when it comes
to
this.
Well, okay, let me
How does male estrogen mm-hmm. affect pain threshold
well,
tolerance?
Well, because, in my view, and this is speculation, estrogen is directly responsible for levels of endorphins in the system, in the body of a human being. Not just women, but both male and female. And so when the estrogen levels are too low, there is not enough estrogen to go around to maintain adequate levels of endorphins. And so the pain threshold goes up.
Which goes to the point that women tend to need a replenished supply of estrogen. Is that true? That they can lose their level, their estrogen levels can drop and their estrogen levels can rise? Is that like serotonin? That same thing happens?
I believe that happens in terms of the traditional understanding is that as a woman ages, the estrogen levels go down because the ovaries produce less and less. And
so therefore they would feel more pain as they get older.
Right. They feel it's not that they feel more pain, it's that they feel pain more.
Well, okay, yes.
They're less protected. They're less, I think estrogen has an analgesic effect in the body.
Which kind of goes with the common perception. As a woman gets older, she gets more achy. As a man gets older, he doesn't get as achy as a woman getting older.
But also think of estrogen.
You know, and also think of the fragility, the bone fragility. A woman mm-hmm. falls, breaks her hip. You know?
Think of estrogen as you would think of oil in your engine, kind of, as a lubricant, as a universal flexibility fluid that maintains all of your bones and vessels and lymphatic system and tissues, nervous system. Everything tends to get brittle with age. It dries up and it tends to get fragile and brittle less and less communication and less fluid and fluidity. With estrogen, this is what is being maintained. However, be careful with taking estrogen, meaning going into a hormonal replacement therapy, because then you stumble into all kinds of problems. See, this is what I'm trying to say, Armand, that I think we've been lighthearted in our approach to hormonal balance in the body, maintenance and restoration. I think that the body knows what it's doing when it fluctuates, and I think that to assume that we know better, and I know I said it a few minutes ago, but I'm going to say it again, research continues to prove that indeed the hormones that we thought were useless are very important, like melatonin. Did you know that estrogen is also related to melatonin production, Armand? Because estrogen directly affects serotonin production.
So if there's an estrogen imbalance, then there's going to be a melatonin imbalance?
Could be, yes.
And what would be the manifestation of a melatonin imbalance?
Melatonin imbalance could be insomnia, could be anxiety, could be memory loss.
People with a dropping estrogen could find themselves having a more difficult time going to sleep.
Right, but that, unfortunately, would be coupled with fatigue during the day, meaning that it's not that the person is energized. The person would feel fatigue and lack of motivation and lack of interest in life, lack of what's it called, anhedonia, meaning that nothing seems interesting, and yet once it comes time to go to bed, the person may be in insomniac.
This so once again, we're hearing the disaster of estrogen.
Estrogen loss.
Loss, you know what I mean? And it's the same old problem, but the new information says, you know, even though we've been trying to deal with this estrogen loss and the emotionality that comes with it, there's more information that suggests that it's not a matter of more or less estrogen. You have estrogen. It is critical.
Mm-hmm.
Critical to your well-being, critical as a neurotransmitter as well, that without, you know, by moderating it, you have to figure you're going to moderate your neurotransmitters, and the neurotransmitters are essential, and let me tell you why you shouldn't eat quail.
Because
quail, what is the name of that stuff?
Quail is the bird on whom this research was performed.
Oh, no, it's natural in quail.
Well, but yeah.
Estradiol,
yes.
Estradiol.
But also the quails were being researched, and that's how all of this was found out. So I honor the quails.
I honor the quails anyway, but the thing about the quails that's really fascinating is that they have this high level of a thing that starts with an A. Aromatase.
Aromatase.
And aromatase is what converts something into estrogen.
It converts, I think, testosterone into estrogen.
And so when they looked at quail, they said, hey, quail, what good are you in the world? And they said, well, we could do better with estrogen than anybody else. We have this high level of it. So, you know,
Leave it to the quails.
Leave it to the quails.
So with estrogen, I guess what Armand and I are saying, and why we bring this information to you, and I admit that it's a little bit of a draft still, because it just came out and we don't really have a whole lot of information. We just have this brand new information about estrogen, but we are bringing it to you immediately because we believe it's important to talk about estrogen and talk about progesterone and testosterone and hormones from a different perspective, meaning that that estrogen, think of it this way. Let's think liver cells, for instance. Well, one would think, okay, so what does estrogen have to do with liver cells? Well, liver cells need to be kept flexible and lubricated and fluid and functional. And so directly or indirectly, estrogen is responsible for maintaining your liver cells, just like every other cell in the body. Now, when it comes to diet, it can be confusing, because what we have been told is that fat cells produce estrogen, and that's true. But that does not equate with, if you eat fat, you're going to have more estrogen. So be careful making that assumption. The fat cells in your body produce estrogen, yes. But eating fat does not increase production of estrogen. In fact, eating fat is necessary, good kind of fat, in order to maintain adequate levels of hormones all the way around. And in a low-fat diet, one of the problems is exactly that that's not possible.
We're speaking with Roberta Maria Achi, by the way, who Creative Health Solutions is her organization, creativehealthsolutions.org. You know, a couple of calls, Roberta, because I think there's an audience out there. I just got some signals, messages that, you know, we never take calls. But related to this, there are a lot of people who I think have questions or they want to say something about it. And we're going to take a couple of calls today. 212-209-2900 is our number here. This is Armand DeMille. 212-209-2900. Estrogen, progesterone, the hormones taking on a new role now. They're taking on a different perception. You know, we're looking at it differently. Now I understand why women could feel more than men and feel it more quickly. Well, now I understand why a wound to a woman might be, to someone high in estrogen, is going to feel different than to someone who is lower in estrogen. You know, it just, mm-hmm. it now makes sense. It's not you're too sensitive. It's not that. And the neurotransmitter effect of it, the effect of the fact that we can transmit feelings through the body so much faster. The only thing I think is a crime is women expecting that men are going to be as sensitive as they are. Mm. It's just the equipment's not there. Mm. I'm sorry. You could train them as much as you want.
The receptors are not there.
They unless they eat quail. You know, I mean, put your man in a quail diet, but then the poor quail would have to form a group.
Right.
In the Society for the Protection of the Quail.
I don't think it'll work.
212-209-2900. We will take a couple of calls. Armand DeMille, hi.
But I did want to say...
Hello? Go ahead. Oh, right after this call, Roberta. Okay. Hello.
Hi. I'm wondering about... in terms of estrogen and men, or in other words, when you're talking about the liver function and things like that, how is their body affected?
Well, remember that men... I'm sorry, what is your name?
Kathy.
Kathy,
oh,
can you turn your radio all the way off?
Yeah, we...
I'm going to turn it off, yeah.
An echo.
She wanted to hear herself on the
okay,
radio.
Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say that remember that men have estrogen as well. They have a different ratio of testosterone versus estrogen, so that in women you have a predominance of estrogen and in men you have a predominance of testosterone, but both genders have both hormones. So estrogen is present in men's bodies mm-hmm. as well.
So what motivates your question? What have you observed in somebody you know?
Well, I was listening, and you're talking about like melatonin and being reduced, or the estrogen in relation to the liver, and I'm wondering about liver function.
Do you have somebody who you're very close to who's got problem with their livers?
Well, I don't. I have somebody who I'm very close to. Who I'm thinking about with yes, with the
thinking about of, you're thinking about some of the problems that he might have.
Yeah,
and you're wondering if they're related to this.
Yeah.
What are the problems that he might have?
Well, I think liver function, when it's not functioning properly,
is
there's more cholesterol production. And
is he depressed?
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Has he ever, I mean, does he ever talk to you about it, what he feels?
Oh, yes, yeah, yes, we do.
And his how does he feel in the world? Does he feel powerless in the world?
Sometimes, yes, mm-hmm.
Because that kind of powerlessness can have, as Roberta is saying, it can have a hormonal thing to it as well. You know, there could be that as well, and it could be, you know, around the liver function and so on and so forth. But what I hear from you is that your heart is aching because you love somebody who's in pain.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry to hear it. So yes, there is information that you could learn about it. But, you know, sometimes when you're with somebody who is depressed, best thing you can do is find them some help for the depression itself.
Uh-huh. Okay. I'll definitely look into that.
Okay, and now, Roberta, you were going to say?
Well, I was going to say, for a man, you see, in the body of the woman and in the body of the man, estrogen is going to work differently, but in the diet, for instance, there are certain foods that support normalcy when it comes to levels of estrogen and are also beneficial to the liver, like the carbohydrates from roots and tubers and legumes, like chickpeas and yucca and yams and carrots and potatoes. Those are things that both for men and for women help maintaining adequate levels of estrogen for fluidity and health of all cells without interfering with the body's own inner balance.
Oh, okay.
Well, thank you for calling. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Kathy.
Okay, thank you.
212-209-2900. I'm Amanda Miller and Roberta Maria Atti taking your calls. If you wanted a copy of today's program or to go over this information, you could always call my office at 212-757-4488. Or look on the website, thepositivemind.com. You could also replay this program. Very often, if you go to WBAI.org, you can download the program of the day. If that's out of whack, give it a shot through the website. ThePositiveMind.com. Take another call. I'm on DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. This is Rich from New Jersey.
Hello, Rich. Good.
Hi, Rich.
Good. I'm calling actually about my dear wife, who at age 50, and I hope this pertains, at age 50, she has hit menopause in a big way.
Yeah.
And between hot flashes, mood swings, and energy drops, it is sometimes just debilitating to her. She doesn't want to take any of the synthetic estrogens because of the side effects that seem to be coming out almost on a daily basis, and she also doesn't like the antidepressants. I think if you had to categorize her lifestyle, it would be more in line with a Gary Null kind of lifestyle. And you know, she's all natural. She doesn't eat meat. She doesn't eat chicken. She's a vegetarian. She juices. And she just would, you know, 5 years ago, she's looking at this coming on saying, hey, this is going to be a breeze. Look how natural I am. Look how healthy I am. And it's killing her. Is there anything she can do to kind of normalize herself or at least flatline everything so she doesn't have these big swings?
Well, you're saying she's vegetarian, and already the way that you're describing the way that she eats, I would immediately assume that there's not enough fat in her diet. And fat for women at that age is so important, and it has been so maligned, and there's such a misunderstanding and miscommunication when it comes to that every woman I find and I speak to who has been influenced by this information eats way too little fat.
What kind of fat would be good?
Well, of course, olive oil, and of course the essential fatty acids that are in the green vegetables and in fish and in eggs, organic eggs, and sheep yogurt, goat yogurt, fermented dairy, not the milk and those things, but fermented with lactobacillus, because those are predigested. And I even recommend that women eat cultured butter. Organic, of course, because you don't want the synthetic hormones and antibiotics. But from what you described, your wife is off of those things. So, you know, I don't want to convince anyone. I'm just saying from my own observations and experience that's
that may
case.
Not be a bad idea for them to get some time to talk to you privately, Roberta, you know, since we're out of time. One more thing I'm going to say is that as the husband of somebody going through this, you must be pulling your hair out.
No, you know what? I know that it's not her.
I know
when to take a step back. I know when to give her some space. And I know when to go and put my arm around her when she's crying. And,
all right, now I'm going to give you the biggest gift. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Get a ceiling fan for your bedroom. Get a ceiling fan, put the controls on her side.
Boy, you are right about that.
You are amazed. You will be amazed at how efficient a fan could be at critical moments of flashes. It does the job. Thanks for calling in. We have to be going.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Richard.
Roberta, the very good information. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of implications.
Oh, I could talk about fat for hours.
No, not
months.
From fat. I'm talking about from the sex-related hormone.
But what I'm
research.
Saying is related to the hormone research. If, as a nutritionist, I would say the crucial issue that needs to really be put out there is the correct information about fat intake.
Hey, this is Armand DeMille. With going to be back tomorrow with Roberta Mariotti. Roberta is, how do they reach you?
CreativeHealthSolutions.org. Make sure you put an S at the end, solutions.org.
Be back with you tomorrow, my friends, with Kent Robert Shaw doing a little more about the medicine of today.